You have a broken guitar? Don't fret. Take the scenic drive to Fort Atkinson to Jeff's Guitar Clinic. We'll have you fretting your guitar in no time at all. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, we love guitars.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, Associate Editor of the Capital Times and Correspondent for The Nation, John Harrison Nichols. Comrade, welcome to the show.
Comrade, it's good to be with you. So, I guess it's good to be with you.
You know, my priest from my Canadian church grew up in Poland during the Iron Curtain, okay? And I'm going to ask him to compare what's going on in Wisconsin with how he lived as a boy behind the Iron Curtain and then compare the two. With what's going on in Wisconsin.
In fairness to Wisconsin, from a variety of things, we did have an election, and we proved that you can vote a crooked, awful government out of office, right? You can defeat the bad players. So right off the bat, I think we have a different transition of power there, and and we should give us credit for that. The comparison, this is an interesting thing. I was trying to think about this the other day. Obviously, what we're talking about is the fact that Tony Evers and every other statewide Democratic candidate for office won, and that, you know, better part of 200,000 more people voted for Democrats for the legislature than Republicans on November 6th. So it's just like, it's a really incredible day for Democrats coming at the end of a year in which they won, you know, progressives, not Democrats, because it's not partisan, but they won a Supreme Court seat. They defeated Walker's attempt to take away the state treasurer's office. They won two key state Senate special elections. I mean, it's really a year that sort of said to Republicans, you have a choice. You can either rethink how you're doing stuff, because obviously it's not popular, or you can use your last lingering bit of power to try and undermine not merely the people who beat you, but the kind of elections that you were defeated in, i.e. high turnout elections. Now, you may talk to your priest and have your discussion about this, but I've been trying to think around, you know, like, where do you see this sort of thing where they, you know, change election dates to make sure that it doesn't harm you politically. You sort of mangle the processes and stuff like this. And I would argue, and very seriously, the American South in that transition period, you know, after voting rights and civil rights, where you saw, you know, or in that period of change, where like Louisiana kind of changed its whole primary system.
When Cindy Hyde Smith was enrolled in a segregationist school,
yes,
that era?
Exactly. Well, yeah. When Roy Moore was a young man. But you know, this thing of...
He was at the mall.
Yeah, he wasn't really thinking about it that much. But the interesting thing is that when power realized that it was threatened, right, then they started to mess with the election process.
Like the runoff elections.
Exactly. You do, right? And you find all these different...
Which is how Paul Coverdale became a senator.
There you go. Yeah. But imagine this in Louisiana, right? You know, suddenly the November election became sort of this wide open primary, and then there's something else after it. And, you know, down in Georgia, you can get elected governor, but if you don't get 50%, maybe Lester Maddox can become governor. And yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He essentially had a lot of power as lieutenant governor. Right.
So all I'm saying is that one of the things that distinguished Wisconsin always was that because of our immigration patterns, we, you know, a lot of people had come from Scandinavia, from Germany, from other places. even England and that, and they had sort of a very proper way of doing it. You don't, you know, these are the rules of the rules, right? You play by them. And my sense is that what you're seeing with Scott Walker, Robin Voss, Scott Fitzgerald, the people are trying to mangle, you know, trying to A, sort of invalidate election results that they didn't like, but also try to mangle future elections, is a very, you know, something that relates to some of the more unsettling American interventions against democracy.
Well, Scott Walker is still tweeting out about how many votes he got and how he got
more
votes.
So Donald Trump.
Yeah. He got more votes in 2014 than he did in 2014, and he got more votes than any other Republican, and he got, you know, so he keeps tweeting that out. Chuck Todd, of course, is having a field day.
Yeah,
it's making
hilarious.
Fun of it, making fun of it. But beneath the surface, they're trying to kind of validate their existence for running the state.
But this is Trump. I mean, this is a Trump thing, right? And I honestly think we're kind of dumb in this regard because we don't remind ourselves as much as we should that people evolve. They learn things. They learn strategies. They learn tactics. And I think Donald Trump is the great instructor, the professor for the Republican Party at this point. And
well, we're dreaming, they're scheming.
Well, yes. But also that what Trump, you know, he got wiped out in the popular vote in 2016. He was just obliterated, right? Loses by 2.9 million votes.
He got a lower percentage than Romney.
I mean, you just run down the list. It was just unbelievable. He finished behind, you know, all sorts of people who lost the presidency, right percentage-wise. And so he's always like, biggest victory ever, hugest mandate ever. And, you know, well, and if I didn't win this or that, it was because of this or that. You know, like,
does he have a picture of Rutherford B. Hayes in his office? I'm thinking he should. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, well, Rutherford B. Hayes really is, you know, in my list of, he's on my top five of the worst. And, Trump is making it more complex, isn't it? You know, and so, but anyway, I'm just saying this is an important thing, though, because I do think that because we've seen the collapse of traditional media, a lot of it in this country. And so the newspapers, the traditional TV shows and things like that used to be able to say, hold it, that's absurd. It's harder now because our politics has become, you know, sort of swaddled in money and because of all sorts of other things that the rules keep, you know, the rules maybe aren't what they always were. They aren't understood as such. And what Trump is showing Republicans is you can mess with stuff. You can change rules. You can, you know, like have a lame duck session and rewrite the election laws so that maybe you won't lose a Supreme Court seat 2 years from now. I think what's going on right now is a really big deal because the proposal by Walker, and we should always understand Walker's at the heart of all this. You know, he has long-term ambitions. Anybody who thinks a guy who's run 25 or 26 primary and general election campaigns since 1990 is like doesn't have ambition, it's absurd. Of course, he's thinking about, you know, what he might do next and stuff like that. So it's Walker, Voss, and Fitzgerald trying to, you know, weaken Tony Evers, trying to weaken Josh Call, trying to, you know, shift power over to the legislature on a whole bunch of stuff, but also trying to mangle early voting, which is a very, very key thing, and then also trying to change the date of the presidential primary to make sure that they can protect their inept, ridiculous Supreme Court Justice Daniel Kelly. You know, this is a very... I think that
I'll ask you in a few moments why you call him inept, but we'll get to that.
Well, he's not a competent candidate. They're terrified. I mean, why? If they thought he was like the greatest thing since sliced bread, wouldn't they say, "Oh yeah, we'll take any election"?
Well, they already think that Brian Hagedorn's going to lose to Lisa Neubauer.
Well, that's what
they
mean.
Already think he's a failure.
And it's
by the way, more Republicans have told me that like Hagedorn is just
tragedy, right? You know, and it's just, but it's sort of like. It's an interesting thing because it's kind of, you know, when our Republican friends criticize something or our conservative friends do it, you can always tell that that's the thing that they're sort of scared about, right? That's what freaks them out. So they're always like, well, we don't like where public education is right now because, you know, there's like no grades and everybody gets a participation trophy.
Brad Schimmel got
a participation trophy. He lost. The people of
Wisconsin. That was very mean you wrote that. That was very mean.
People of Wisconsin said, we don't want this man representing us in the courtroom. So they put him in charge of the courtroom.
You know, that one I didn't have a problem with so much. Whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
You're going to have a problem.
It's Waukesha County.
You're going to have a problem when they move Dan Kelly out and run him as their Supreme Court candidate in 2020.
You think that's what they're going to do?
I don't know. Did I say that? I don't know.
Well, we're dreaming, they're scheming.
Yeah, they sure are.
So, moving the election. Luther Olson doesn't seem to be on board with this.
That's
right?
One.
All right.
This is in the state Senate. We're talking about the Wisconsin State Senate. We're talking at a point where it looks like on Monday they're going to introduce a host of radical changes.
40 bills?
Yeah. I mean, one of the most ambitious legislative agendas in, you know, Wisconsin politics. And they're going to try and change everything, change structures of state government, change election dates, change, you know, early voting, structures of democracy itself. One aspect of that is to move the presidential primary to a date between the spring primary and the spring election in 2020 to protect the inept Dan Kelly, who is a, you know,
never been a judge.
Conservative judicial activist appointed to the Supreme Court for the sole purpose of sustaining the Walker administration. Now Walker's out, so they want to, you know, they're playing these games. Anyway, bottom line is that Luther Olson, a state senator, says that maybe, you know, he's not on board. You know, he might not be comfortable with that. You might get in a couple. That one might be vulnerable, even though they really want it. But they might be vulnerable on this.
Rob Coles may not be for that.
Well, state senators who actually pay attention to the people in their district, right? Which I know it's certainly not like somebody like Mark Lyne would never do that. But people who actually are connected to their district, right, and who care about it, who listen, who don't just win by, you know, bringing in truckloads of money from outside, they're hearing from the clerks, right? They're hearing from the county clerks.
60 of the 72 clerks.
Right, in the state. These are county clerks who are administering elections saying, that's bad. But they're also hearing from town clerks, village clerks, city clerks, because the core operation of an election is run, you know, often at a very local level. And if you're like a Luther Olson, who's representing a lot of townships, small towns, what they're saying is, if you do this, right, that you, to protect the inept Dan Kelly, you move a presidential primary right in the middle between a February primary for Supreme Court and the presidential, then you have the April general election for Supreme Court. You got all this stuff in there that if by chance, let's say that Brad Schimmel is the conservative candidate for Supreme Court, and maybe Dan Kelly doesn't get out of the way because somehow the Regent University people tell him to stay there, whoever he listens to. And then somebody else is in there, so you have a primary. Let's say the primary is close, right? And they have to do a recount. You realize that a number of days after, you got to reconcile the results from the primary. Then, let's say it's really close, and somebody asks for a recount. That recount then starts straying into the period where for the presidential, you're already, by then, certainly already supposed to be doing early voting for it, even if they mangle early voting. And suddenly you've got a chaos at the local level. And we all know this. We know that what they are creating to protect Dan Kelly, a guy who's, you know, shouldn't be on the Supreme Court, to protect this inept character, they are, you know, they're going to mangle.
How many times have you found a way to work in inept in this conversation?
That might be unfair. Incompetent. I don't know. What do you want to say about a guy? I'm not the one saying this, right? You understand? Robin Voss, Scott Fitzgerald, Scott Walker are saying, we believe, now I'm translating, of course, but they're basically in, you know, whatever language they're speaking, they're saying, we know this guy is so unappealing, so unable to, you know, like make a case for himself for being on the Supreme Court, to make a case for people voting for him. He's just such a mess of a character, right? that we literally have to create chaos in our elections to possibly give him a chance to be viable. And even then, I suspect, again, that they're probably going to bump him aside. And,
well, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll see. Yeah. He's been actually pretty good on a couple Fourth Amendment cases, but he is extremely right-wing, does not really believe in the separation of church and state.
Well, his education was not in such a tradition. But more than that, it's not. When I say he's inept, I don't mean that he's stupid. I'm talking about pure
Michael Gableman was stupid.
Well, that's you. You may say that. But what I'm saying—
They pushed him aside.
When we're saying inept here, I'm talking politics.
Right.
These people don't care about whether you're a good judge or that. You know, that's not what they're concerned about.
They care about two things.
Yeah.
Getting elected and voting.
And being a robotic
character.
Now, is it possible that this character, this Kelly guy, you know, that he's, you know, he's got some chops that he might evolve into a competent judge, you know, in his very early stages of his judicial career? Maybe, I don't know. You know, that's
irrelevant. He's no Shirley Abrahamson.
No, he's not.
So the argument they're making, and I saw the majority leader, Jim Steinke from Kakana, rationally, he goes, look, I was an elected official at the local level. We cannot have these local officials running for election at the same time we've got a partisan race. That's just a terrible combination. And I keep trying to think of what exactly would be bad about a higher turnout in a local
election. You'd be legitimized. That'd be the problem.
I can't possibly imagine how people couldn't separate those things.
Well, let me offer you a notion here.
You know, I remember the voters of Dane County in 1972 in the Democratic primary when they voted for George McGovern through an awful, awful, awful judge named Russell Mittelstadt out of office. He was like sentencing people that had protested the Vietnam War.
It was a good thing to get rid of him.
Yeah. He got thrown out.
Yeah.
That's true. It was by Archie Simonson, but he was the better of the two.
Well, it went bad ultimately. But let me offer you a notion here. Somehow.
But it was a big turnout.
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Steinke, really a smart and good man, I'm sure. But with all due respect to Mr. Steinke, Ronald Reagan won a presidential primary in Wisconsin on the day of the spring election when we were voting for the Supreme Court. George W. Bush, won a Wisconsin primary on the day that we were voting for the Supreme Court. In fact, Diane Sykes, I believe, won that day. Donald Trump did not win, but ran in a Wisconsin primary on the day
Rebecca
we were
Bradley.
Electing a justice. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
And somehow, I have to check Mr. Steinke's record, you know, I have to check Scott Walker's record on this. But, you know, they had a really good opportunity in, for instance, 2016, my mistake, in 2016 to rectify this situation. Because here you had a Supreme Court election that was going to clearly run right into a open presidential race. They could have changed the rules, and they didn't choose to then. They are, I'm trying to think of the right word for this. I think lying when they say that they think there's a problem with having local elections on the same day.
Here's the funny thing. Here's what would be just so ironic. Mm-hmm. There is every possibility that Donald Trump will not be running for re-election.
I agree.
In 2020,
and that the big turnout could be on the Republican side.
Yeah, absolutely. You could have John Kasich. You could have all
Scott
sorts
Walker.
Of people. You could have Mike Lee. You could have all these people. Scott Walker.
Why not? You know.
Okay. Well,
come on.
The point is that they could end up getting bitten by this.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think there's a real chance of it that you could have. Because remember,
things aren't looking good for Trump right now.
Well, one of the theories, by the way, on Mr. Trump is of course, that, you know, Nancy Pelosi, well, you know, I believe that her default line, you know, if you just like, what just came into your head? Her default line is impeachment is off the table, right? I mean, she always says that. So maybe Trump, it won't happen.
May not run again.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like you literally ladle all this stuff on, and he's like, hey, I decided I've done enough. And so he's gone. Suddenly, you have a chaotic Republican primary with maybe 15 people running, huge turnout. And then let's say, just as an example, that if they had kept the Democratic, kept the presidential primary on the same day, let's say, I'm not saying this is the case, but let's say, you know, you've got Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Beto O'Rourke, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, all these people running.
Richard Ojeda.
Yeah, Ojeda, there you go. And Tulsi Gabbard. And, you know, the list is really long. They're all running, and they're all running kind of the left. And Joe Biden wins the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary.
And it's over.
And they get to Wisconsin.
All right, we're going to take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation with us at SlysOffice.com.
Hi there. My name is Ishmael Ozan, and many of you know me as the Dane County District Attorney, but I am also a husband and a father of two young girls. Today, I am asking you to make the choice my wife and I made to not use physical punishment with our children. Many of us are not aware that over 16 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics urged doctors to recommend that parents not use physical punishment on their children. Today, over 100 years of research on children and families supports this recommendation. Look, well-meaning parents may use physical discipline intending to teach their children to make good choices. But we now know that physical discipline actually leads to more disobedience and aggressive behaviors in children. We all want what is best for our kids. Today, we now know what is best for kids is parenting based on respect, mutual understanding, and logic, rather than fear of physical pain. Please join me in learning more about positive parenting and creating a violence-free home.
Paid for by the Dane County District Attorney's Office with support from UW Health American Family Children's Hospital.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Computer Works, and Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. Thank you, Jeff. All right, so let's talk about all the other horrible things that they're contemplating, okay? They're very scared of Josh Call, the incoming attorney general.
As they should be. He is
a formidable person.
He's very competent. He's a man of the law, former federal prosecutor. He's worked with top firms. I mean, he really is good at this stuff. And the fact is he also will have the confidence of the lawyers in the Department of Justice.
Oh, there were a lot of celebrating at the Risser building.
Well, come on. They literally stepped up and said it's horrible under.
And not just liberals.
No.
I'm just talking about career professionals.
Yeah, as people saying, you know, Brad Schimmel, you know, I mean, the one thing you'd want to do is keep him out of a courtroom. You wouldn't want him to obviously be a judge, but it certainly wasn't very good as attorney general.
It was
either.
Like having Frank Burns as attorney general.
Did Frank Burns know how to play guitar? anyways, and so the thing about it is, also I think Frank Burns is a more ethical man. So they're afraid of Josh Call. They're afraid that Josh Call will reassert the rule of law. And this is a big deal because it's important to understand this has very little to do with partisanship. Or ideology. What we're talking about here is basically just hack politicians afraid of a competent person. Because the truth of the matter is, Josh Call could on some issues be a problem for Tony Evers.
This?
Yeah. Josh Call is a very... He
was raised by someone who wasn't afraid to go after Jim Doyle.
His mother, Peg Lautenschlager, was incredibly courageous in stepping up to testify and stand out on environmental issues, land uses, a host of issues where sometimes that put her at odds with her own party. And it made her a national hero, certainly the best attorney general Wisconsin's ever had. Josh Call, in my impression, it isn't just that he is his mother's son. It is also that the course he has chosen suggests to me that he's going to come in there as a very straight shooter lawyer. Now, if the Republicans in Wisconsin, Voss, Fitzgerald, Walker, if these folks really were, you know, just partisans, right? If that was all that they were about, they might think, you know, Call might be kind of okay there. Some good might come of that. That might work. That's not what they're about. They are about their personal, individual power, how to maintain it, how to keep, you know, kind of ahead of the curve. And so they're restructuring stuff to move lawyers out of the DOJ and to move authority out of the DOJ, to weaken DOJ, Department of Justice, weaken calls area, and move that power over to the legislature to, you know, kind of have its own sort of legal operations.
So what do they want to do to the Attorney General's office? They want to stop him from being able to remove the state of Wisconsin from the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Right.
And then they also, if he's going to enter into things, he's got to, they're talking about this notion, enter in, get out of things.
As far as defending state laws, he has to get approval.
If he's, where he's going and how he's approaching it. So it's basically, instead of making
They don't want him defending some of their laws.
Right. They also don't want him joining in national lawsuits and things without legislative. You know, it's basically what they're saying is we want to be able to tell you when you can act. And so that's a twofold thing. Number one, it's taking away some measure of Josh Call's own ability to make his call. The guy elected by the people of Wisconsin to be Attorney General saying, well, we don't want you to think for yourself. And we also don't want you to go at the counsel of the governor, right? Which is historically how you might think of this. Instead, we want you to operate at our behest, at the legislature's behest. So there's really a movement of a lot of authority over the AG's office into the legislature. That's step one. They're also talking about shifting, you know, doing all sorts of changes as regards Solicitor General's office, the lawyers that do that. And in general, if you look at this, it's an effort to really kind of narrow in the AG's office. I would say the comparable way to understand it is, if you look at what the state treasurer's office was and the Secretary of State's office was 40 years ago, and you look at this long process of, you know, undermining the authority of those offices, this is sort of what they're trying to do here.
The difference is, and I don't know all the details, and you can bet lawyers are looking at this right now.
They are, by the way.
Yeah. Is that those offices, and I've talked to Doug LaFollette about this, those offices had the misfortune of not having specific duties written into the state constitution. Right. And so that's why they were able to get away with that. And frankly, let's be honest, there were plenty of Democrats that were bad at taking power away from those offices as
well. No, this is a bipartisan. And, right. and the sin began in 1967. Right. Yeah.
So the duties that they're talking about taking away from Josh Call, how many of them are actually within the constitution of the statutes for that office? I don't know.
Yeah, the answer is that a lot of what the legislature is trying to do is perhaps within its, you know, that they've got space in which they may be able to get away with some of this. This will be litigated. I mean, you know, there are going to be fights back and
forth.
Then
we get back to Dan Kelly.
Then we get back to Dan Kelly and control the Supreme Court, which becomes a really big deal. And so what I would tell you
is Patience Rogensack, the Chief Justice, is turned out to be, she promised to be a moderate. She's turned out to be a right-wing sycophant.
She's moderately in the pocket of Scott Walker and the Republicans.
It's like Donald Trump was lightly into the Moscow deal.
Lightly is a good word.
Yeah, I love that. He used that word lightly.
It's got possibilities. But anyway, what I'll tell you is this. You know, there'll be a back and forth and there'll be a push and pull. The Department of Justice will still exist. It will still have, frankly, quite a bit of authority. But what they're doing is they're trying to chip away at the areas where a attorney general in Wisconsin could really be a leader for the rule of law and B, could be like attorneys general in other states. Because what we're seeing is around the country, AGs are starting to develop as, you know, not at the exact same level as a governor, but very important officials.
I think they truly believe that even if they lose in redistricting, and there's different lines, I think they think they have a durable majority because of the way Democrats have populated into urban areas that make it much harder for Democrats to have districts outstate. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's necessarily true, but I think that's what they believe.
Oh, yeah. I think, look.
Which is why they want to permanently move the power to the
court.
They want to move
to themselves, the legislature. Yeah. Well, I think that's a pretty good bet, Sly. And can I emphasize, if you look over the, you know, history of Wisconsin, right, over the last 100 years, If you say, well, what's the default position? The default position is Republicans control the legislature. And they, you know, they they really have in a lot of cases for a lot of time. Not always. They've obviously been incredibly strong.
The 70s was a good time for
Democrats. Early 80s, early 82 80s, election, yeah. But here, I'll give you an example. The 82 election, which was the last election in Democrat in which Democrats swept every statewide constitutional office and a Senate race. 82 was the last time before 2018.
Proxmire and Earl.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then down the ballot, they had all those. They also swept into epic majorities, Democratic majorities in the Assembly and the Senate. Not because of gerrymandering, because what we found is over time those became more competitive, right? Not so much because of gerrymandering, but because the districts were competitive enough that when you had a big Democratic year, you got the whole thing. That is harder, A, because of gerrymandering, as we've discussed, but B, because of what you were just referencing. We have had, you know, sort of hollowing out of some of our rural areas.
Well, there's a national trend in that as far as rural areas going solidly Republican.
But, you know, important to understand that we saw some, you know, clawback in the 2018 election.
We did.
Especially in the Southwest.
And then finally, what they're trying to do to the governor. Let's talk about what they, with WEDIC, which has been an absolute disaster, completely unaccountable agency that has frittered away millions of taxpayer dollars.
Millions.
And as far as I'm concerned, the Foxconn deal is a scandal.
Yeah.
The ineptitude of dealing with the Kimberly-Clark situation is a scandal.
Yeah.
Nobody's even talking about that.
Which is, by the way, going to be a part of all this maneuvering.
Right.
In as regards to special session.
Yeah.
So, what they did at the governor's office is interesting. Again, it's like, sort of like what we're talking about with the AG's office. They're going to try and dial down a lot of the governor's flexibility to work in a number of areas with appointments, obviously working with the AG on, you know, joining suits, doing things. And one of the key elements of this is that it, understand WEDIC as an example. It was created by Scott Walker. And designed to have immense power for the governor, right? It was literally designed.
It's a slush fund.
Well, you could say that. And
I just did.
And I don't think I argued with you. And so they, but it's created by Scott Walker. Where remember that he was originally, until it became like so incredibly scandal plagued that it was embarrassing to have your name associated with it. Remember he was like the chairman of it, or you know, he had some sort of big role there, and also all this appointment powers and stuff like that. Now, Tony Evers says, clearly, speaking the will of the people of Wisconsin, this is a horrible mess of an agency. We're going to get rid of it, move the powers back into the State Department of Commerce, accountability, the whole bit. And what they're saying is, no. Not only do we not want, you know, these steps to be taken, we want to take away your power to lead WEDIC, to appoint people to the board, to in general, and we want to move that power over to the legislature. So effectively, what we're saying is, here we have a scandal-plagued slush fund created by Scott Walker, and now they're saying is, Tony Evers wants to clean that up, and they're saying, no. We want to take over. We want to run that.
Right.
And you will see that also, frankly, it isn't just this. If you look at all the bills that are coming forward, there's a number of interventions of this kind where they're basically saying, we want the legislature to be able to have a much greater say.
All right. Well, the Democrats have put out statements on all this. It's been pretty tame. Should the Democrats be looking to, you know, what would Chuck Quala do?
Well, they might ask him. He is still around.
Oh, I know he's involved in the transition.
I don't know what exactly where he's at, but here's the number one thing that is concerning, I would argue, is Robin Voss, who we've criticized a little bit.
He's an evil man.
Oh, well, that's a sharp statement. But Robin
Voss. He's a man literally with no redeeming qualities.
Popcorn salesman.
Yeah.
But
he's a horrible man.
But Robin Voss.
Awful human being.
Okay, so now let me say something nice about him. He told you exactly what he was going to do on November 7th, right? The day after the election. He's like, we're going to mangle this stuff. We're going to try and weaken this guy. And then Fitzgerald, right, who's a little slyer, right, goes,
That's just bureaucracy. It's our don't even pay attention to what we're going to do. Right? He's sort of like trying to downplay it, right? But boss is like, no. We're gonna screw them. You know, we're gonna try and figure out ways to get power away, right? And Fitzgerald's like, ixnay on the uskre, you know, or whatever. And but the end result is that they telegraphed this on November 7th. It's amazing to me that Democrats didn't establish a war room on November 7th and say, we have a problem here. We know how these people have operated before. We know what they're capable of. Why didn't the Democrats immediately get ready for this? I do think that's it. It's a little bit of a wake up call.
I think there are a lot of people right now waiting to get a cue from our leadership in this state. You know, I think people would take to that building.
Yeah, though here's the thing, and I want to just offer one tiny bit of counsel here. I don't underestimate the extent to which Walker, Voss, and Fitzgerald sort of want to create an antipathy, an anger, a dysfunction that they would hope would extend into.
You're looking for a more passive-aggressive approach here? What are we looking for?
What I would suggest is this. I think that people should make their opposition clearly known. I think that should be with demonstrations, with calls, with all the communications you can. You know, all the, you know, what the Constitution of the United States tells us we should do, which is assemble, petition for the redress of grievances, the whole bit. You know, respect the vote. But at the same time, you know, I think that Tony Evers should be very aggressively trying to figure out how to beat this thing with legislative strategy, right? With, can I convince a couple people not to vote for certain things? Can I do some of this? And I know that some people will see that as sort of an insider thing. But remember that as of first week in January, Tony Evers is going to be the governor dealing with these same people, right? And so at a certain point, he needs to do, in my opinion, or they have to have two things. Number one, mobilization, strong, you know, all the stuff of getting people on your side, right, and strong support. But B, you do have to figure out your strategies, and that this is a real test. And all I would suggest is if Evers and the people around him can figure out how to beat these guys by getting a couple of senators to flip over and not advance some things, that's an incredibly empowering signal regards.
For all we know, that could be going on behind the scenes.
That's why I think that's
important. The irony of all this is while they're giving the governor-elect the shaft, they're also leaving him with a huge budget shortfall. That is,
which, by the way,
the level of audaciousness is.
Yeah, and which, by the way, is it's important to understand that back in 2011, it was a much smaller budget. Well, you can analyze them different ways, but it was a budget shortfall that they used.
After a recession.
Right. I know, in the midst of a scorching recession, basically, that they used as an excuse to drive through an empowerment of the governor. Remember that in that initial budget reconciliation, the thing that they did back in February, early March of 2011, one of the things they did within it was allow the governor to appoint all sorts of new people.
They're very pliable. Yeah. Finally, let me just make the statement here and now that the first casualty of their bad behavior should be Stephanie Klett, the tourism secretary, who has always been self-serving and a self-promoter and has clearly orchestrated this little effort to keep herself in a position as tourism secretary. Tony Evers absolutely should make sure she's the last person that ever sets foot in that tourism office.
Let me put it this way.
If
Stephanie Klett steps up in the next, you know, day or so and says, I object to what these legislators are doing. This is wrong. And, you know, really calls the administration out. She might, or the Walker administration out and all these manipulations. She might show herself to be an independent person who's, you know, worthy of consideration. But if she doesn't do that, if she is a part of this circle and this conspiracy basically to, you know, not only weaken the incoming governor and the incoming attorney general, but also to mangle the election laws of the state. If she's a part of that as a member of this circle, I would find it kind of amazing that anybody would give her a job.
The chances of her calling out the Republicans are the same chances of me buying a Prius. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thank you for coming to SlysOffice.com.
Pleasure.